Hello and welcome back to Cider Voice. Or should I say Cider Voice? We're having fun today. It's just the three of us. If you were living under a rock and you've never listened to this podcast before, you may not be aware that last weekend was CraftCon. But if you haven't listened to this podcast, then you probably heard us talk about it a lot of times. It's CraftCon is the UK's only nationwide cider making trade conference. It's organised by the Three Counties Cider and Perry Association, of which I am the current chair for my sins. And this year we had some very special attendees. We had my two co-hosts, co-producers of this podcast in attendance. Justin merely as his normal man of the people on the floor, but Adam actually was our keynote speaker opening the conference on the Friday, as well as the session chair for the most subscribed session of the conference, which was titled Bittersweet Apples, Cider's Greatest USP and Its Greatest Challenge. And basically everybody that's growing bittersweet apples in Britain these days is just desperate to find someone foolish enough to drink them. And we all basically sat around agreeing with that problem. So anyway, how are you boys doing?
Yeah, doing really, really well. I have a couple of things to say to that introduction. Firstly, if we're describing everyone who doesn't listen to Cider Voice as living under a rock, and it's like there are 15 people not under a rock in the entire
country. I mean, to be brutally honest, I was actually thinking that people who listen to Cider Voice are in fact more likely to be living under rocks than the non-listeners. I think we might actually...
Great. Well, now we've dropped to 11 listeners. Thanks, Justin.
It's not a rock, it's a boulder. I am gone.
But to answer your question, Albert, I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually fresh. Literally returned to the farm less than an hour ago from Manchester, where last night I was hosting a cider tasting. Apparently it was even my 8th or 9th Manchester Cider Club, so apologies to all the Mancunian cider drinkers who were fed up of seeing my face show up and say, it's me again. But we did something different. Last night was Acid Fest, so we didn't have a single bittersweet apple.
Which I wanted to raise that, because you've just done an introduction whining on about how we're just sitting in a bubble talking to each other about how bittersweet apples are great and nobody is actually drinking them. And yet you're going out there saying, have Foxwell, have Gloucester Underleaf. Acid is hype, down with tannins. But I am doing my bit for tannins today, because I'm drinking, actually, you've just been in Manchester. My cider is from the Northwest, if not from Manchester. I'm drinking Suspire, which is from Torn Plant up in Cheshire, I believe. And it is a blend of Dabinet and Chisel Jersey, so as bittersweet as you can get. And it's really nice. This one is part of a trio that I picked up at the same time, and I think they're all experiments with the same two bittersweets. But this is the one they did with a Saison yeast, I think, and then it spent some time in a bourbon barrel. But it's great. It's really, really good.
That's pretty cool.
My first time drinking anything from this producer before, and really, really pleased. Chisel Jersey is, as we know, one of the most uncompromising bittersweet apples, often super, super tannic, except in America, weirdly, where it's really ripe and juicy. And still has tannins, but nothing like when we have it in the UK. But they've managed the tannins fantastically. They're there adding like a lovely structure. It's dry, but the oak and thyme, and I think the blending have really like brought the best out of the two apples. And so I'm really, really enjoying it.
Awesome. Yeah, that sounds really cool.
On the subject of drinking, I am having the free can, which we got given as part of the complimentary can we got given as part of CraftCon, which is a Tom Oliver. So it's Oliver's cider. I sort of ended up keeping it because I kept on not not opening it, because I kept on forgetting that it was at the bottom of the bag. And it's extremely tasty. However, unfortunately, it must have got very, very shaken up in the meantime, because opening it went off a bit like a hand grenade.
So presumably you didn't have it in the fridge.
No, I didn't have it in the fridge. It's just sort of been sort of bumbling. Again, I sort of was carrying the bag, the tote bag round, and kept on forgetting that I had it. And then I found it and was like, oh, I'll have that. Little thinking, I won't need to put this anywhere. So, nonetheless, very nice, very fruity, very very bright. And, yeah, I actually haven't had a great deal of Tom Oliver's stuff, which feels like a bit of a lacuna on my part, considering his rather influential position within Herefordshire cider making. So, time to start doing something about that, I guess.
No better time to change that than today. So, if Absolutely. You listener are out there in Britain and you've never drank an Oliver's, what are you waiting for? Go and get some.
What about you, Albert? Are you drinking anything today?
Unfortunately, I have been in such a rush that I have not yet retrieved a cider. However, if I were to be drinking, then I may... No, I would just have brown snout. If in doubt, brown snout.
Actually,
I might take a brown snout with me to dinner because we're having pizza tonight. And there's a pizza that you can get at the Yew Tree, which is called Cheese's Crust. And it's basically a very heavily cheesed pizza. It's got, you know, pecorino on it, and it's served with honey as well. And it's just like the perfect complement to brown snout. Something very easy and satisfying to eat is also perfect to go alongside something very easy and satisfying to drink. So that's my top tip.
I do think that one day you should release a brown snout that, instead of having your usual very full and detailed explanation and tasting notes on the side, it just says, when in doubt, brown snout, but in very, very big lettering.
Whilst we're talking about bittersweet, I want to jump back into CraftCon and just say how much I enjoyed the bittersweets panel.
That was awesome.
Not least because, as the panel presenter, I didn't really have to do anything besides go, yeah, and what is your opinion on this subject? But also, even though you say that we were just sitting in a silo agreeing with each other that bittersweets are great, I want to shout out, I want to shout out all the panelists, but I particularly want to shout out Tamlin Curran, who was joining us from JanticeRobinson.com, so a wine website and a wine writer. I loved what everyone brought to the Bittersweets panel, but it was really cool to hear about, you know, how tannins are, I mean, we wouldn't call grapes bittersweet, but how tannins in various wines are managed, and then get kind of feedback from Polly and James and Martin, on how that's being applied in cider. And I actually thought that it was fairly, I didn't think it was too navel-gazy, but...
No, I was being dramatic. That was a great session.
Did you describe it as navel gazing, Albert?
No, I said I didn't think it was.
Oh, right. Sorry, I thought the way that you said that made it sound like you were responding to something that Albert had said, and I was like, did I just completely phase out for a bit?
Albert made a joke that we were just agreeing with each other that bittersweets are great. And although that might be the case, I also thought that there's at least two people in there to whom bittersweet cider was a relatively novel concept, and, you know, getting two more people to drink bittersweet cider increases its popularity by as much as 5%. So... I think that's a big win for tannins.
For me, I mean, the whole session was fascinating. A lot of people really enjoyed when Tamlin and Polly started to go off the science end, which is what we all need more of at CraftCon. You know, in the UK, most of us cider makers are doing it by feel, and we often end up making something fantastic, but we're not all fully au fait with tannins. I mean, tannins are really, really complex. So, in fact... That was my third favourite moment. My second favourite moment was you immediately starting the session by saying, James Forbes, would you like to explain what tannins are? the poison tannin grenade to give someone. You know, every cider tour I have around the farm, in cider we're looking at acidity and tannin. And then about half an hour later, someone's finally brave enough to be like, what's tannin? And I'm like, why? Don't ask me that. That's the one thing I can't tell you. Yeah. So they're a mystery.
Well, I will add my two points to that one are, firstly, I had prepped. Firstly, the session was an original suggestion by James, and a very good suggestion. Secondly, I had prepped him by telling him that he was going to be posed this question right at the start, so he'd had some thinking time. And thirdly, going back to what you said at the start, given that James decided that he'd reply to that with, I don't know, And given that we had this epic, massively over my head discussion between Tamlin and Polly halfway through about exactly what tannins were and all the science behind them, I was later thinking at the end of the session, well, I've made a huge blunder by I'll never pose an opening question to James Joker Forbes ever again.
But then my favorite moment was when Brad, Tamlin's husband, who was in the audience, very genuinely and earnestly said, well, you'd never pair a steak with a cider, would you? To which you were able to throw it to my brother, who was able to say, well, actually, we ran an entire series of events about that. Plus, that's literally the entire philosophy of the Basque Country. But aside from that, it was great. And then I got to say that, you know, we do steak and raisin. And maybe it was only in my head because I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure the entire room cheered when I said about steak and raisin. So that was pretty cool.
And then they all stood up and clapped. and that young man's name was Albert Einstein.
Yeah, I know it sounds like that, but basically it was just awesome.
It was. I mean, Brad couldn't have timed it better if like it had been done as a plant. It was literally, I was about to ask Martin about the various events pairing bittersweet apples with food at the yew tree, and particularly the steak and raisins. And then Brad put his hand up and did a perfect segue. So no, I really enjoyed that session, and everyone kind of was on really great form, really really appreciative audience, and I really enjoyed the side. It was kind of more a discussion than it was a tasting, but we had three lovely ciders to try, one from Polly and two in the end from the impeccable Coombe Maddock. So yeah, big shout out to Jeremy and Claire as well for providing those. Justin, sorry, we've talked loads about just one session, but it was your first time going to CraftCon. A few sessions. So what were your takes from the CraftCon experience?
So I ended up getting my tickets a little bit late. I wasn't sure if I was actually going to be able to go. And then sort of the stars aligned, which meant that I kind of was frantically booking on, I think, the Wednesday evening beforehand. I wasn't actually expecting it to be quite what it was in a very good way. I was expecting something maybe almost a little less technical. Like when I saw the list and it was like, oh, wow, this is genuine. Like this is real, you know, industry speaking to itself stuff. Like here is literally how to graft an apple tree and stuff like that. I found that hugely exciting. And it was really interesting, you know, with somebody who's only ever been adjacent to cider and is sort of an interested punter. Actually getting an insight into the real, like, you know, what it's like in the room. So it was cool being there and seeing people talk about stuff in a more professional tone than I'm used to. I was kind of, I mean, when I was choosing the sessions I wanted to go to, I was having terrible analysis paralysis because every single time I'd be like, ah, yes, that one. I'd look at the other options and sort of be going, well, but I also want to do that one. You know, the range of stuff on offer was very exciting. Ultimately, my choices boiled down to what had not yet been fully booked out. But yeah, I mean, God. So I went to the Bittersweets talk. I went to the one on Keg, which was really cool because a lot of people in the room were makers who are interested in exploring the sort of world of keg cider and hadn't yet sort of made that leap or were interested in making that leap, much like the first talk I went to, which was the great sort of Cider 101, moving from a hobby to a business. That was who was doing that one? That was
James, our friend James Finch and Max Noel from Stylehead
Cider. I couldn't remember his surname.
From both of them. I was at that one too, and that was fantastic.
Yeah. I thought the keg one was cool because there was a good point raised. I had always been under the impression that, you know, you get less bang for your buck in terms of kegs. So, you know, keg is more expensive to invest in with infrastructure, and then you can sell it for less per milliliter than you can a 750. But then the very good point was raised that it can almost function a bit like a loss leader, where if you've got a bunch of taps with keg cider on, you can give people tasters, you can sort of refine down what they're looking for, especially if they're new to cider. And that can encourage people to try new things, because I know that was a central part of my journey into cider, was when I turned up at Rossfest, having tried sort of sub 15 ciders in my life, and then being able to go to the Yew Tree and there's a whole bank of them and I can just try different things and come back to them without having to smash open a 750 every time. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed that session. I particularly enjoyed it, you know, because at last year's CraftCon, I hosted a session on keg conditioning where I gave a presentation by myself, because the only other people that were doing it really consistently at that stage were Little Pomona and maybe a bit from Nightingales. But since then, more people have stepped up and started doing it. And so Temple Cider, we're getting that. Basically, we had cider from Temple Cider in Dorset, from Nightingale Cider in Kent, from Little Pomona in Herefordshire, and from Udder's Orchard in Yorkshire. So we've got really honest, full juice, flavoursome cider being put into keg and put on draft taps all over the country, which is the objective. And I wouldn't use the word lost leader, but it's definitely true that keg, you know, having excess cider accessible, having high quality cider accessible on a tap is so much more impactful than having an amazing shelf of brilliant 750s, because they might be the best ciders in the world, but actually we aren't yet there where people look at that and think, I'm just going to pick one at random and drink it, because there isn't that market, there isn't that consumer confidence yet. Yeah. So the kegs are the way to go.
I definitely misused the term lost leader there. I'm sort of going on sort of half-remembered things that other people have said and hoping it makes me sound clever.
No. And also, you know, if any cider makers are listening to this and didn't attend CraftCon and don't know about keg conditioning, it's you know, you can get a great value for your product. That you, if your product is sparkling in a keg, it has a way better value perception than if you're just doing bagging boxes. And it doesn't require any extra effort whatsoever. And actually, it's quicker, it's easier, it's safer, it's more reliable. There are so many advantages to keg over bagging box. The only challenge is selling it is harder, because basically bagging box is a solo effort that everywhere stocks them. But is that what we want cider to be in Britain? Still often tired ciders in bag-in-box, not really.
I mean I gotta say, like, watching you, so you gave a physical demonstration of a lot of this was quite technical, so I was sort of watching sort of on the skin of my teeth trying to work out what was actually going on. But
sorry, you were watching on the skin of your
teeth. I don't know I'm mixing my metaphors, I'm tired at the moment, silence. I think it was with actually seeing how easy it was to sort of get the stuff into the keg and then get it out again. It really was ultra straightforward. And in my head, that always kind of existed as a strange, arcane, complicated process. And it did seem just ridiculously just sort of, you know, you get this Watsit, you get this Wodger, and you sort of mash them together and click a button, and then it goes whoosh, and then suddenly everything's done for you. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, amazing. Very technical terminology there.
If everyone stocks up on Watsits and Wodgers, then we'll just have
we'll be
so
fine.
Much keg conditioned cider all over the place. It is, I mean, the more I think about keg conditioned cider, the more it should be the easiest thing in the world to kind of, you know, talk about to your sort of local tap room. Because I keep, you know, obviously beer drinkers are familiar with, like, casks conditioning and all that sort of thing. But then where casks, after they've conditioned, you know, from what I've learned, you need to sell the beer in like a really short amount of time after you've tapped it. The keg conditioned cider just gets better and better the longer it sits in the keg. So it's, you know, it should be an absolute, you know, no brainer for you know, tap rooms that sell really kind of high quality beers or drinks or whatever to put on, because I mean that's brilliant. I mean, imagine how happy beer drinkers would be if cask ale got better and better the longer it was sort of sitting on, and it's, you know, and this is a living drink in just the same way. Doesn't really add anything to the, you know, to what you're saying about CraftCon, but I just
in my head. No, these are the conversations that CraftCon inspires.
Sometimes we're allowed to just sit back and revel in the fantasy that one day cider won't be a weird niche drink for proper nerds and will actually be everywhere, and we can always drink it whenever we go into a random pub, but unfortunately it's not quite happened yet. Justin, how about Adam? That keynote was really spectacular.
Like... what and such an elegant segue into that conversation, Albert. Like, absolutely, you know, I couldn't see the seam if I tried. No, Adam, like I sort of mumbled "well done" immediately afterwards. But Adam was giving the keynote on Perry, and it was an absolute banger. I was sort of ready to go, and you know, I wasn't quite sure whether I wanted a sort of torch and a pitchfork, or whether I wanted like a sort of garden fork and a shovel and go and sort of plant Perry trees. But it was certainly a quite active call to action. And I was pleased that it was mentioned about the sometimes the very nice but sometimes slightly frustrating sort of shrinking violet nature of some makers towards their own product, that sort of being encouraging people to bang the drum of their extremely beautiful stuff, I think was well worthwhile.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And God, I had absolutely no idea about that Pear Tree Lane thing. That was astounding.
Yeah, that was awesome. When I
yeah, that getting that getting that applause was, as well was like
yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, to the listener, we didn't record it live, which is a catastrophic blunder because Justin was literally in the front row and was in the perfect position to do it. So I don't know why I didn't get done. But if you head to Cider Review, you'll find the transcript that I'm used. But Adam's actually said to me that when we finish recording this episode, he's going to perform it for you all after this, and it'll be coming out in the following episode. So you can look forward to that. Isn't that right, Adam?
Yes, and I must have just blacked out momentarily, which is why I can't remember saying that right now. But I've heard somebody told me that I repeatedly blacked out and don't remember honking like a goose several times. During the presentation.
Yeah, exactly. So,
probably a good job that we didn't record it live, or there'd be all sorts of kind of farmyard sounds going on, you know, midway through this, you know, splenetic rants about people cutting down pear trees or the, you know, the segues into calling Perry makers idiots, or the bits telling them off for not saying, you know, loud,
for not, proud for not being like incredibly arrogant.
Yeah. Why any more boastful?
Well, if any reader or if any listener is sad that they missed out on Adam giving that keynote at CraftCon, then the best thing to do is just to look up all the book launch dates for Perrier Drinker's Guide, which is starting on the 3rd of May next month, and there's sessions all through the summer. So you should get down, meet Adam, tell him you're one of our 12 listeners, and be amazed by the way that Adam can inspire you to care about Perry even more than you thought you already did.
Oh, yeah.
You are consistently better at plugging my book than I am. Thank you very much. Saves me from
plugging. I'm excited about the book.
Maybe Perry writers need to be less of a shrinking violet as well. Who knew?
Maybe. we're all the same. One thing that I want to say, you having just said some very nice things about me, is two things. Firstly, massive congratulations to you, Albert, and also to all the team, but particularly Lydia and Emma, for, you know, putting together this incredible event. You know, most subscribed CraftCon yet, as far as I can remember. You know, I was only able to go to the first day, but I absolutely loved it. I thought it had, you know, so much energy. There were everyone at every topic that I went and listened to was sort of so inspiring, and everyone was coming out of the sessions, you know, feeling really fired up by whatever they'd listened to. I was super, you know, jealous of all the sessions that I didn't get to go, you know, and watch. Like Justin said, there's no wrong answer, but you just wish that you could have been to everything. So yeah, to those who missed out this year, absolutely get yourselves down to CraftCon 2025. But yeah, really well done to you, Albert. And as an aside, I will say that I don't know whether I enjoyed, but I noted that Ross Festival Albert was in full flow, roaming the halls with a look of sort of existential crisis.
Yeah, a sort of grey faced and very, you know, ultra focused.
You did a phenomenal job.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. I'm proud of this stat. So we've had 26 responses to our post-event feedback form so far.
Fantastic.
And 26 people think it's important that CraftCon happens next year, and 26 people plan to attend CraftCon next year. So it really It was a wonderful conference, super exciting, and there were all sorts of people there. You know, like, I wished that there were kind of more technical, more advanced sessions, but there were some people who really wanted and really valued the beginner sessions, like we were talking about with Cider 101. So it's a wonderful opportunity to attend an event, even if you're not yet a commercial cider maker, even if you don't think you might be. A better opportunity there is not to get fully integrated and involved with the cider community and meet producers that you as an enthusiast are going to be able to say hello to, and then go away, and then 2 years later you'll visit their farm, their cidery, whatever, and have a really meaningful experience after that. So it's for everybody, certainly.
I mean, I did find that it was an incredibly, like, a ridiculously welcoming space. You know, as I kept on jokingly introducing myself as a niche internet micro celebrity on account of Cider Voice, but you know, I'm not a maker or anything like that. I just sort of exist in the orbit, and yet people were incredibly welcoming, incredibly open. Such a variety of people there as well, and an incredible way to meet so many different makers, and sellers, and interested people, learn a lot. I think it was also quite cool, just as a space for finding out about different makers. I'm not very good at researching this kind of thing. And so having people just come up and sort of introduce themselves, and then finding out who they are, and they're a maker, and then they might have something at the bottle share in the evening and that you can try. And I don't know, it was a very expanding experience, and one that felt very welcoming. And yeah, I mean, as you've been saying, even, you know, although I was saying I wasn't expecting it to be quite so much like, oh wait, this is an actual industry event. It still felt accessible and understanding, understandable rather. And you know, for people who might consider going next time, you know, even if you're just interested, and you just want to learn more about this craft, I think it's a fantastic thing to go to, and an amazing place to meet sort of interested and like-minded people.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. There's something there for everybody. Also, I'm glad that you have brought up my grey-faced organizer mode, because I've been involved in organizing this event every year it's happened since 2019. But this one was the first time where I wasn't just involved in the committee, but I was the actual chair. So I definitely felt the responsibility of it going smoothly. So it was almost the CraftCon that I enjoyed the least out of all of them because of that, but I certainly got over it and I enjoyed it, and obviously my massive ego was very much enjoying the end of the conference, where we had a brilliant sign off and there was a big clap. That was great.
Yeah.
Well deserved. It was fantastic. And actually, I was going to say as well, you have the advantage of us, because Justin and I were both unable to make the second day of CraftCon, which we're both, you know, enormously disappointed by. Probably Justin even more than me, because then we might have been able to have got a slightly easier journey back home afterwards. But yep. the point is that we missed not only the speeches and presentations that were at the same time as ones we went to on the first day, but also a whole bunch of amazing events on the second day, and two which I'd love to hear about, if you're able to tell us about them, Albert. I don't know whether you went to the second session. Firstly, the other keynote speech, which was by James Croden, which is massive and fantastic. It was really great to speak to James at the bottle share on the first day. But also, we had our first sort of, I think it's the first, CraftCon International session with delegates coming from Italy. So I'd love to hear about those, if you could tell us.
Yeah, so if people aren't aware who James is, James Crowden is like the UK's foremost cider author and researcher. He's absolutely brilliant. He's an amazing character to meet, and he delivered the keynote on the second day, which was about the early history of sparkling bottled cider in England in the 1600s, and just brilliant. And I mean, if you haven't read James's most recent book, Cider Country, that's the name of the most recent one, Cider Country, then you definitely should. But the wonderful thing for me about the keynote is that I enjoyed reading his book, because to me there's a very Keith Floyd energy about it. Keith Floyd, the television chef, he's no longer alive anymore, but where it's just in everything there is joy found in the details. And James is so inspired and so fascinated by the history of these people that were making cider and making glass and growing apples in the 1600s and doing it, and you know, out of bizarre reasons. Well, not really, you know, but it's just a unique thing. And then we kind of lost it for the following 200 years, and it's being rediscovered now. But James can just deliver it in a way that is joyful and inspiring. And so everybody really enjoyed that session. It's one of the sessions that's come up a lot in our feedback form. And obviously James himself was sent in a feedback form saying that next year we should get him back to talk about this other historical thing that he's now interested in. So,
okay, I'm definitely coming for both days. At least partially because I also don't want to take a 2 a.m. bus that takes 4 hours.
Yeah, that was miserable for you. But the nice thing it was as well, when James's session finished, our first tasting of the day was a traditional method session delivered by Lawrence from Little Pomona and Peter Crawford from Norton Cider. So people had been primed and inspired by hearing about the individuals who discovered the walnut of sugar, the traditional method in England, which then got stolen by the champagne industry and rebranded. And then they were being taught how to do it and tasting it. So it was kind of a really fun segue to start the day, really, really fun link up. There wasn't really planned. It was just like, well, we're putting this here. And then it worked really nicely. but the end session that I did attend was super cool. So we got an email come in a few months ago from Andrea Bedini, who is the secretary of the Association of Italian Pomeliers. And the president of this association is actually our great friend Marco Manfrini, who I just love to absolute bits. He's an absolute genius of tasting, but a more dynamic and relaxed. He's both those things, because if you've met Marco, he is just everything in one person. He's brilliant. So Andrea and Marco came over. They sent some Italian cider over. So we had a Perry from a cidery called Crozier. We had a Method traditional cider from someone called Melgodo, or I think Melgodo. And we had an elderflower infused cider from Floribunda, who are my number one recommendation if you're ever looking for European cideries. Floribunda make incredible, clean, expressive, floral, fruity ciders. They're super good. And hearing about the, essentially what it was this, it was only, you know, we unfortunately had an hour, but we essentially had a presentation on the activities of the association. So if you're listening to this, you might think, what, cider in Italy, really? But, you know, it was the Romans what brought apples to Britain, wasn't it? So actually, there is a legacy of cider making in Italy, and there are around, they've got, I think, documented 95 different cider producers across Italy, which is a huge number. In the UK, we've only got about 500. So for them to have already discovered in 3 years a fifth of the number of we are, it is quite astounding. But they've found all these producers. They're getting them together. There's a cider club in Torino that Andrea founded. There's really a kind of growing interest and movement in cider in Italy, and it's getting out there. And a nice thing is that there's a documentary being produced about Italian cider, and they showed us a trailer for that, and it's going to be, I think, a very special documentary. Marco actually flew from leaving CraftCon, he flew straight to Sicily to finish filming on that, where they were visiting a cider company that has orchards on the slopes of Mount Etna.
Yeah, that's really epic. He was telling me about, I think he said there were as many as 4 or 5 on Mount Etna now.
Yeah, he sent me a picture, yeah.
One of whom I was really pleased to hear is Vitaly, who used to make cider and perry in the Ukraine in Berryland. Very, very sadly, his cidery was destroyed early on in the Russian invasion. So I was really delighted to hear that he's making again, and in such a cool location. But echoing what,
or rather, such a hot location.
Ha ha! I mean, it's especially cool because Etna wine is having a real moment at the moment. It's phenomenal. I was lucky enough to go to Sicily in 2015, and I absolutely loved the wine there. So I was really excited to hear that they're making cider. It makes total sense. I mean, you go there, and it is covered in fruit trees, and mainly citrus, as you'd expect, and then vines. But you know, clearly they've got a lot of apples too. But I want to shout out Andrea and Marco as well, because They got in touch with me when I was nearly finished with the book, and if it hadn't been for them, I wouldn't have known that along with this fantastic, flourishing cider scene, there are also quite a few makers, 8 or 9, who are having a go at Perry. So I was really excited to try an Italian Perry. They managed to get a taste of it at the bottle share, so that was awesome. But yeah, really, really exciting things happening in Italy, which makes sense, right? I mean, you know, Northern Italy is bordering on a whole bunch of great cider producing and perry producing nations, with Austria in the north there, and and France in the northwest. So awesome to get a view of that. And I think just generally brilliant to be expanding CraftCon's view beyond just our own shores. So yeah, really well done for that as well.
I mean, we've talked before about how much we wish cider was more internationally interconnected, and even that, you know, even more cross communication would be lovely. And I think that's hugely exciting. I mean, you know, I was vaguely aware of it, cider existing in Italy, and I'm sort of not surprised, but the idea of there being, you know, 95 producers just there already making is hugely exciting.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it or not, but probably because it's not a big deal. But I've just, the New York Cider Association just reached out to me to ask if I'd speak in a webinar to their members. So that's epic. Another link that might be coming up. That's nice.
Well, you are now very big in America following the presentation at CraftCon's spiritual sibling CiderCon. Earlier in the year. So that's awesome. That's fantastic.
I have to get out to CiderCon. When I can, using all that cider voice money we're going to have.
Oh, it just keeps flowing in at the moment. There's never been a single email received, but the money is coming in hot.
Yeah. I
will say on that note, if you would like to email us, please do. It's you can find us easily. I mean, you can DM us on social media as well. It's perfect. But albert@cidervoice.com is my official email, which is completely full of emails from my web host and nobody else ever.
I'll send you an email.
Hi, Albert.
Yeah, it's lonely in the world of Cider Voice. That's why it's Cider Voice and not Voices, because no one's ever said hello back to me, just screaming into the void. Even these two, they're not actually real people. They're just... It's me using a voice modulator. And then that's why they keep talking up Ross on Y, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually just
it was
Albert.
A really, really meta episode when you just used the two voice modulators and not your own.
That was to throw everybody off. Yeah, I kept saying, oh, Albert's going to be so mad when he hears this episode. Obviously, you viewers, you listeners didn't realize that I was me doing the voices saying I'd be mad, etc.
Well, anyway, when Albert, you get an email golf in your inbox soon saying Cider Voice listener number 5@hotmail.com, don't worry, that will absolutely be one of our
an email from notaburneraccount@gmail.com.
My friend, this is breaking news. Forget the joking we just had. I've loaded up ourpomona.org, which is a crowdsourced wiki for information on cider, apples, and cider making. And there are 8 new items awaiting approval. So someone, I think possibly Jack Toy, has submitted an apple to the Pomona and also 7 new tasting notes. And I'm guessing that it might be Jack, only because the apple that's been submitted is Tardy Forestier, which as far as I know, we're the only producers sad and sick enough to actually release as a single variety. So I've not rushed to upload it to the Pomona, but I know that Jack's kind of, he likes it, he thinks it's an interesting apple. It certainly is interesting, so yeah.
I would say that I randomly checked today, and over 30 people, or at least, or one person over 30 times possibly, has clicked through from Cider Review to our Pomona. So we're sending people through in their tens.
in their literal severals.
Yeah, but yeah, fair enough. It's a good reminder to people that the to our 12 listeners that you should absolutely go online to arpomona.org wherever you're making or drinking cider, because you know we generally only have access to English varieties and very occasionally to others. But this is meant to be a global Pomona that is aimed specifically at maker and drinker rather than just pomologist, and it's a really cool, useful resource. And I'm saying all this to ease the guilt of not having gone and uploaded as much stuff as I want to. But
you know, I'll soon be doing an absolute coward.
The thing is, you know, I'm really proud of the website that I commissioned that my friend Neil produced. But it is it was made during lockdown, and so it's slightly out of date. And in particular, the software that was used to make it is slightly out of date. So making changes is a bigger project, and we're starting to collect suggestions on what changes we can add and how we can improve it. So if people do think that they think that they may have use as a drinker, a cider maker, an orchardist for a crowdsourced modern Pomona about apples, then take a look and get in touch about what you might like to see change. But in particular, the reason I said approvals earlier is that there are word clouds on our Pomona for the tasting notes or for observations on how the tree grows, for example. And if you're the first person to ever submit a word, it has to be approved before it can be entered. So that's a kind of spam filter so that we don't end up with lots of rude words about apples like brown snout or butt. if once the word's been approved once and someone agrees with it, they can enter it and it will immediately give you the feedback. But I don't know which words these tasting notes were added to, which varieties these tasting notes were added to, for example. So I've been trying to browse and find it, but I don't think there's already 54 apples, so they could be anywhere. One of the tasting notes was polished wood. So, Jack, if it was you that gave these, I'd love to know which 10,000% variety.
1,000%, that is Jack. That has only ever come. That's only ever come from a whiskey drinker, and it's only me.
But yeah, I'm not sure which apple it is.
He's only put notes in for things he's been drinking oak cask stuff off. Every single apple has a polished wood note.
No, to be clear to any listeners, that's not the intention of the Pomona, so you shouldn't do that. But I will again go back to shouting out Adam, point out it's a global Pomona, and one of the things we do that's really interesting is if you're submitting data on harvest, for example, your sugar levels or when you pressed it or when it blossomed. When you submit that data, you can say where in the world your apples are from. So we can compare, for example, how Dabernet might grow and the sugar levels we might expect to see in Central Europe versus in the States or New Zealand or somewhere like that. So, yeah, it's very cool.
That is really cool. You should do, I think, an R Pomona themed conversation at next year's CraftCon, just to return back to the actual subjects of this podcast. But
someone else has suggested that actually in the feedback. So
yeah, I think
I'd like to, but I'm always conscious that I don't want it to turn into the Ross and Wise show, even though I'm one of the organisers. So.
Well, I mean, our Pomona is sort of been sort of set up by you guys, but it's not like the Ross on Y. It's not called Ross on Y Pomona. It's called
exactly.
Justin, I think that you and me, I think you and me should host the our Pomona seminar next year.
Yeah,
and say loads of things that are wrong and watch out.
I think we should also do it and introduce it using a cover of the song My Sharona, but changed to our Pomona.
Maybe that should be our new theme tune. And so
our Pomona. I don't know the words well enough. I just know the bird. Anyway.
thank you for the earworm.
My pleasure.
So one thing, listeners, I've got two more things I want to talk about quickly because we're already 50 minutes past my target time for this episode. So that's how you know there really are two other people with me. Otherwise,
running I'm long,
been and
running
done.
Long, us never.
So
how dare you?
On the subject of our Pomona,
it's like
and on
keg,
the subject
we just get better
of the podcast. In the next couple of months, I'm hoping to use the brilliant palates of my two friends here to do some recorded tastings for you where you will then be able to order those ciders from us. So this obviously is a shameless plug because we'd need to get that cider voice money in. But the idea essentially is that you'll be able to have a box of single varieties. And if you so choose, I mean, you can just drink them by yourself if you want, but if you so choose, you can taste them come up with some thoughts and then listen to us chatting about them as well. And you know, hopefully that's going to be a way wherever you are, if you're remote and you don't have a cider club near you or something like that, you'll be able to get some satisfaction out of sharing it with us. So that's it. I think we'll do single variety apples, and we'll also do the true taste of Fawn, which is going to be a tasting at May 25th at the Yew Tree, where we're going to taste 9 different versions of the same single variety pear, Fawn. And that one will also, there'll be boxes available to order and drink anywhere else in the world, and or in the UK, sorry, rather. And I hope that there will be some other events put on by some people. I hope maybe I can convince Susie, for example, to put it on up at Fram for Men in Durham, but we'll see. So yeah, that's hopefully in the pipeline. I've been telling these two and they haven't refused, so hopefully we'll do that, and we'll see if anyone actually, I mean, probably what will happen is that we'll record the episode and then no one will buy a box, but that's fine because we'll have an episode.
I'm really excited. I can't wait to try the same pair 9 times, although I will say that it is I hate to say redundant, but certainly too late, because people can simply discover the true taste of Thorn by turning to page whatever it is in upcoming book Perrier Drinker's Guide, and I will say the taste right there.
The true taste of Thorn has some excellent like fantasy saga energy to it.
Yeah.
Like I mean, not the true, actually, just The Taste of Thorn would be the first book, and then The True Taste of Thorn would be the energy of the end of the trilogy.
The Taste of Thorn is I don't know, it might be giving fantasy, but I think it's also giving Mills and Boone vaguely.
I mean, let's be honest, Adam, there's often a lot of crossover.
Right, well, on that note,
I just rapidly googling Mills and Boone because I didn't get the reference. So oh, they're like, doesn't know
it's,
yeah.
It's like quite horny sort of pulp fiction.
Very good. I think it could definitely go that way. On the subject of CraftCon, I just want to say as well to people who are listening to this who are cider maker, I came away from CraftCon with such a desire to experiment and improve my own methods and the work that we're doing at Ross on Wye, in every aspect of it. We had orcharding sessions that seriously inspired my brother and have galvanized John to want to do orchard work. And we did, through the tasting and the discussion and the experimentation and the sharing of knowledge, I'm now very, very interested and curious in how we can get the most out of our belt press. We switched presses 2.5 years ago, and we're now pretty confident on using it, but we're now wondering actually how good is the cider that we're producing from it. It's the hard part about cider. You only get to do it once a year, and it takes a year to be ready, maybe longer. So we're only now kind of assessing stuff and wondering, this is good, but could it be better? And part of the brilliant thing about CraftCon is that there are people who want to discuss the could it be better bit, and you can drive each other forward and everything else. So it makes me feel very excited and interested in the next year's cider making activity on the farm and what we're going to do and what we might discover about our apples and the best way to get stuff out of them. So I feel very energized at the moment about cider.
It's epic. I'm so pleased to hear that.
It was a very an energizing environment.
Normally my moods like this lasts for about 32 hours and then I'll be like, oh god, nobody likes bittersweet apples.
But you got a week out of it this time. and then went and did a talk on acid varieties.
Well, but no, because to be fair, the immediate reaction from CraftCon was total crisis of confidence and 2 days of soul searching. And then I eventually calmed down. My palate adjusted because I drank cider for 9 days out of 10 leading up to the final day of CraftCon, because it had been Easter weekend and we'd had an event here. Marco had been here. There wasn't, basically my palate was fucked. And it was so good to let it reset. And then on Tuesday night, I went with Becky out with her parents to an Indian restaurant, which was Bring Your Own Booze, which I heartily endorse, and absolutely just thoroughly enjoyed a full bottle of 2021 Raison, which was produced on the belt press, and thought, this is cider. So maybe it's not
all
like it yet.
All I can imagine is you calling over some poor, very hectored, sort of busy, very much your game face, grey-faced, you know, working a very busy restaurant waiter, and just holding up the bottle and going, who made this? Who made this?
All right. Anything else, boys?
No, I think I'm craft conned out for 2024, but I can't wait for it to come back in 2025.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot to come. But the most important thing for everybody is that you have 3 weeks left to pre-order Perry A Drinker's Guide, so you can release it the very first day it comes out, which I recommend you do. Perry A Drinker's Guide. Cheers!
Cheers!
Cheers, everyone!